Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot.
And today, I'm delighted to be joined by an old friend and colleague, Phil Curtis. He is the director at First 30. Phil, thanks for joining me today.
No, it's a pleasure, Nick. Lovely to be with you.
So, you and I have a long history. We've worked together in the past. We've actually traveled the world a little bit. But for the benefit of the listeners, help them out. Tell them a little bit about your journey to where you are as the founder and director of First 30.
Yeah, sure thing. The journey actually comes, there's two pathways to it. First being the business route, which I was originally a mechanical engineer and was a manager at the Rover plant, the vehicle assembly plant at Cowley in Oxford. And from there, realized I wasn't particularly good as an engineer and was a bit better at running companies than building cars. So I got myself into a consulting role with the big four, big five, big six firm, depending on the period you're in, KPMG, which of course is where you and I first came into contact. I was really fortunate. They had a very, very good international placement program. And as you'll remember from this, I got placed into Bahrain and took my young family out to Bahrain for 3 years, coincident with you being in Saudi Arabia. And so we had a very, very a good crossover at that point. And since then, I've been back in the UK building businesses and working in sort of publicly financed, publicly funded companies. And last year, decided that with a slight milestone birthday, it was time for me to slow down a little bit and possibly give something back to the next generation of entrepreneurs and business builders. Hence, I started First 30 as a way of helping technology companies, technology entrepreneurs, start up, grow, and develop their case.
So you're right, Phil. We did. We both had the fortune of working in the Middle East. I was very grateful for that experience and the opportunity to both experience other countries and cultures, and also the opportunity to learn from others as a simple physician working in the consultancy world. But over the course of that time, one of the things that struck me, you know, in hindsight now, was that I was, for the most part, unaware of a medical condition that you'd been living with for a long time. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. That's the second leg of the how I got here story, really. I'm a type 1 diabetic, and I was diagnosed very young at the age of 5. And diabetes in that form is one of those things which, if you manage it carefully and closely, doesn't have to be that obvious. It can be very intrusive. If it goes wrong, it can be so intrusive and so damaging. But if you manage it smartly and well, nobody needs to know outside of your very close family and your very close friends. And so, you know, I was diagnosed at 5, bad measles case and very, very high temperature that provoked an autoimmune reaction and killed the pancreas. So from then on, I've been working through using as much of the advancing processes, the advancing technologies that are available to me. I've always had this engineering curiosity about it. And so advances in insulin delivery, but more importantly, in the early days, was advances in testing. So how does one know the body condition? How does one know the blood sugar levels? And when I first started, it was weeing into a pot and having to use a test tube with a tablet, which would go either blue, which was good, sort of orangey, which wasn't good, yellow, which wasn't so good, and a very dark orange color, which meant, you know, you've overloaded the sugars. And since then, of course, we've gone through the finger pricks and we've gone now into subskin sensors. I've always been involved. From the very early days, I was lucky enough to be looked after by the Oxford University Hospital when I was here with the car factory. And they were one of the most advanced researchers, developers of treatment techniques and technologies. So I've always had that connection. And, you know, I'm 60 years old now, 55 years in. That's a pretty good dose of experience and learning every day. New stuff comes up every day, and there's always new stuff to do.
You know, it's interesting. You bring up some history that's important to understand. And, you know, I couldn't have reconciled the tablets in a test tube, but, you know, the next innovation of that was dipsticks. And, you know, I think people would have been potentially more familiar with that, although maybe that, well, actually, I imagine that's probably more familiarity because we saw that with finger sticks. That was still the same process.
Yeah.
But the thing about the urine testing is that that's delayed. You're essentially looking at something that is delayed. And we moved up the chain to finger stick and measure the blood glucose. That was, I guess, an innovation and started to allow for better control. You've been hacking this and living with it for the majority of your life. Tell us a little bit about the experiences and, you know, maybe some of the learning points, the highs and lows in there.
Oh, and they've been many, because there's a curiosity that the targets now that we are aiming to achieve. So we sit here now looking for we set a range of blood sugar, blood glucose reading at the moment. So in the UK, we use a different scale. So 3.9 millimole per DL is the threshold for a low blood glucose. 10 is the threshold for a high blood glucose, and you're aiming to stay within that boundary. And currently the target sets around about 70% of your time you should be within that range. That sort of range was absolutely impossible to achieve probably 5-10 years ago.
Wow.
And so if you think, when I was a kid growing up and going through puberty, the idea of staying within the bounds of a good target range was almost impossible. So you did what you could. And, you know, the days of hyperglycemias where the low blood sugar events where, you know, it gets a bit messy, you get really sweaty and you feel rubbish for a couple of hours. Similarly, the hyperglycemia where a much slower onset and it's a much more pervasive, this smell of the smell in your nose that really won't go away, because the insulin takes 2 hours, or pretty much always has done, to take an effect. So you can, as an engineer with an idea of control systems, if I feel bad now, I've got to take a corrective measure that isn't really going to work completely for the next 2 hours. So the question mark of, have I done enough and should I do more? The only now through the ability to measure and monitor more closely, can you eliminate that roller coaster ride? Back when I was a kid, you just had to suck it up and live with it. So the effect on kidneys, the effect on feet, the effect on eyes, the predictions when I was a child were for all the conditions that I would suffer when I got into my 40s were quite unpleasant. Now, thankfully, good control, good discipline, I've managed to avoid most of those. But, you know, there are implications on the real world. So, you know, just recently I've had to replace my driving license. My driving license in the UK lasts for 3 years and has to be renewed on a medical review every 3 years. It's a form filling exercise, but they still have this medical review that says, are you still fit to drive? Sadly, the idea of what fit to drive is in the dark ages, because they're not really up to speed with how we monitor and how we measure. And I guess, you know, I may be unusual that I'm at one end of the spectrum on being able to monitor this stuff. But, you know, your questionnaire talks about, are you aware of hyperglycemia? Do you understand the signs of hyperglycemia? Which, for me, I've got a set of testing gear that tells me every 5 minutes what my blood glucose is. So quite frankly, am I aware of hyperglycemia is a nice question, and I am, but I've got a digital readout in front of me that tells me what it actually is. So you know, we've come a long way. Sadly, the authorities are struggling to keep up, partly because they've got to deal with a mass population that isn't as joined up or connected as I might be. And, you know, this goes back, you know, I don't know if you remember the in the old days, I used to be into motorsport. I'm a sports coach and I do a lot of activity stuff. I used to be into motorsports, and in my 20s, we got together a rally team for the World Championship. And it was a bit of a novelty because one of the blood sugar, you know, the finger prick testing companies was sponsoring the team. So it was a great advertisement for them. We got through all the qualifying rounds, did the European Championship round in Wales, got to the Lombard RAC rally, and the night before, the FIA and the organisers decided they didn't like the idea of a diabetic competing because there was a possibility I would have to drive the car at some stage, even though I was the navigator. And as a consequence, they banned me. So, you know, fortunately, we had another qualified co-driver with the right licensing in the team. We sort of thought this might happen, so we were prepared for it. But yeah, you sort of hit a few brick walls along the way.
You know, I appreciate you sharing it, all of that. For those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Today, I'm talking to Phil Curtis. He is the director of First 30. We were just talking about his experiences with diabetes and the challenges that you faced throughout. In fact, you know, as part of that rally team for those on different sides of the pond. You know, this was a Top Gear interview for you, to be clear, pre-Jeremy Clarkson and Stig, I think, but you're also on Grandstand. For those that know what Grandstand is, that's the sports program for Saturdays where we don't watch American football or indeed college football, to be clear. It's soccer or football, as we would call it. And you know, a huge brick wall, but one of the things that really strikes me about this is, first of all, you know, all of those dire predictions, which you've managed to disprove, and, you know, there's some fortune in there, but I think some extreme hard work and what I would describe as human hacking. You've hacked this process throughout that period of time, managed to control, because that's the way that you do sort of reverse that. You've now got more data at your fingertips, and, you know, you talked a little bit about that, the continuous glucose monitoring that is interstitial in nature. It's devices that are sort of placed and continue to output. And, you know, regulatory systems don't catch up as quick, but, you know, you're ahead of the game. Tell us a little bit, as you look back, what you think about of the inflection points and the learning experiences that have really played positively to that whole hacking experience. And what I would call, you know, for the most part, a positive outcome.
Yeah, there are the big, those little S-curve moments where you get to a peak of a trend. The first big one was, as you pointed out earlier, the blood, you know, the finger prick strips to monitor blood glucose rather than having to do urine. You know, as you say, urine is anything probably 40 minutes plus delayed from actual blood sugar, possibly even more. So the idea of having that close coupled relationship between what's going on in the body and what you know about it, that was a real turning point. And this was, you know, this was back in the 80s. So this was hence, you know, the company that I was working with on the rally team were providers of blood sugar testing kit. I was a user of their kit. And I was interviewed on screen in the rally car doing a blood test. You know, we literally came into the service halt. The mechanics jacked the car up and were doing things with the wheels and tires. My driver was out having a cup of coffee, and I'm sat there in my seat doing a blood test. Now, that would have been impossible. And so to be able to continue healthily through the night in that sort of environment. So that's a big, big step. The other step has been much more progressive, which is the improving quality of hypodermic needles and the insulin delivery pens. Because I now have a delivery pen, which I can change the needle every. You know, the argument is you should have a fresh needle for every injection. It's a pain in the backside to do that every single time. So I sort of run, I run a needle a day, which will do me sort of 3 or 4 insulin injections in the day. But those needles are now brilliantly produced, brilliantly sharp. And so the impact on the skin and the subcutaneous layers below are minimal. You know, and I'm taking probably 5, 6, 7 injections a day. And I've been, you know, probably not quite as many in the early days. But, you know, if you think that you add that up over the years since the injections got better, say the last 20 years, that's an awful lot of injections. Yet no hypertrophy on the skin. You know, everyone was saying, you know, you're going to end up with skin like leather. And it doesn't quite work like that because the technology has improved. The next inflection point, naturally, is the subcutaneous, the sensors. So I run an Abbott Freestyle Libre, which is brilliant, but of itself, it has limitations. And this is where the current hacking comes in, because I've started to extend its capability. Abbott are catching up. So Abbott are developing this anyway. But, you know, there are sort of little niche technology companies out there. So there's a small transmitter that goes and sits on top of the Libra, which is a transmitter to your phone. So I can now get on my mobile phone. And, you know, we had to cut the interview a moment ago when my low blood sugar warning went off. I now get a transmission to my mobile phone every 5 minutes of what my BG level is. And you can set alarms. And so I set an alarm. If 3.9 is my low level, I set an alarm at 4.5. And I just hit that a moment ago. So this is the preemptive alarm that says your sugars are falling. You're not in trouble yet. But if you don't do something about it, you will be. So a couple of glucose tabs and, you know, all is good. And that runs every 5 minutes. So that takes it to my phone, which gives me that control loop. The next bit, and this is the really smart bit, is that if using the phone app, and again, it's another third-party phone app, that puts a calendar item onto my Apple Watch, which also can then be shared with the car. So running Apple CarPlay, I can get a calendar item every 5 minutes on my dashboard that tells me what my BG is. So this idea about, are you aware what a hyperglycemia feels like when they're worried about me driving? Not only am I aware, but I've got a constant feed of where my blood sugar is. And this is where, when driving previously, you sort of did some tests before you got in the car. You sort of projected how long you were going to be in the car for, and you made an estimate of whether your sugars were going to rise or fall or whatever. And, you know, that was pretty unreliable. And all you could go on was your own personal awareness of how you felt. Now I know every 5 minutes, if it's inching down or inching up, I can do something about it. And this is what gives you that ability to stay in that green zone, stay in that level, in that that boundary of being in a good place. And so from a therapeutic point of view, the impacts on eyes, kidneys, feet, circulation, and all those other bad secondary effects are diminished. If you get this right, it's absolutely superb. And this comes now full circle back to my business intentions, which are, you know, to work with entrepreneurs, technologists, startups, anybody that's got any smart ideas in this space, to get them over the business hurdles of starting a company and building a business that's actually got the potential to change people's lives and make diabetes care more fully available. I've got 5 suppliers in my personal hack system. Wouldn't it be great if there was one business that could tie that together?
So I think for the benefit of the listeners, as part of this podcast, we'll be posting the details of that. We'll point you to Phil's website so that you can read about it. He's going to detail the steps. I think for most of us who don't live with that experience, you know, there's a part of us that go, well, who needs my blood glucose for that? But your highlighting all of these essential, and this is not for a rally driver, although to be clear, I think an awful lot of people still drive on the roads that way. But for the regular driver, this is an essential piece of data, which, you know, by the time they're getting all of the indicators that you feel personally, it's not that it's too late, but, you know, you've missed that 2-hour window, and, you know, you've got to spend time for recovery and all of the sort of sequelae of that. So I think tremendously exciting, and it's one of the great powers of the spread of data and knowledge. And what I heard in your sort of description of this is, you know, data is key, the immediacy of data is key, and then the sort of innovations and supporting that. In the closing section, just tell us what the future holds and what you're excited about. Where do you see this going, and where are the opportunities?
Well, I think, you know, it's the future is the one big step, which I think is an interesting one, is, you know, the use or the making smaller the insulin pumps. So you have a closed loop system where the insulin pump reacts to the test and is able to then, without doing the injections. Now, at the moment, the pumps are either sort of taped on or in your pocket with a cannula to feed them. That's inconvenient. It's not easy. It's not the best physical solution. There are also some limitations, because the one thing I know as a sports coach, you know, I'm a cyclist and a canoeist. I know when I begin a bike ride what I'm about to do. So therefore I know, and I can preempt, I can prepare with insulin or sugars to manage my way through that ride. The insulin pumps can't do that. So the insulin pumps at the moment are in reaction rather than proaction. So the ability to use artificial intelligence and some machine learning to be able to understand what's going on and what's about to happen, that's where the true next stage value is. And that's a really exciting prospect.
Yeah, so it's data and immediacy, and I think immediacy of action that is more closely aligned with the body's mechanisms of achieving this, which is, you know, it's their feedback loop is constant, and reproducing that, which, you know, I think people sort of talk about as the automated pancreas, a little bit incorrectly, because it's really the automated islets of Langerhans, but yep. That's a whole other thing. But, you know, I think tremendous opportunity, and that innovation for me is clearly accelerating. I think we've reached this inflection point of access to information and technology, and there is real potential to help solve these problems that will make life easier for folks that don't have the engineering skills, not in those circumstances where you've managed to sort of explore it. But I think in gratitude to the folks that laid the pathway, you know, we work on the shoulders of individuals like you. And I would imagine that even some of these large organizations will look at this and say, gosh, we must do that, which, you know, to me is the highest form of flattery. So exciting times, just delighted to sort of hear about it and also for you to share it. So just remains for me to thank you for joining me on the show, Phil. Thanks for being here.
No, it's been a pleasure, Nick. And as I say, anything I can do to, again, to share some of these experiences and to just open up some of the conversations is worth it, and very happy to do so.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, TheIncrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.